D1, number 16A.
We come to Christianity, and Christianity in Absolute Christian Science is symbolized by those two terms, life and love. We see that the term truth does not appear. Why? There must be a reason. And to see that reason really gives the clue of what life and love in Christianity mean. What is Christianity? Christianity is the outcome of the Christ idea. So Christ truth becomes in Christianity man. And man has not an office of its own, therefore cannot be symbolized through a synonymous term. Man is the outcome of the Christ idea. So the Christ here becomes manifest as man, be it individual man, collective man, compound idea men, generic men, or whatever it is. But it's the outcome, and we cannot give to an idea, which is the outcome, symbolize an idea through a synonymous term. Synonymous term always stands for the Godhead, never for man, for the idea, for creation. Therefore, we see that if we want to know something about man, the universe, or creation, which cannot be symbolized through a synonymous term, we must know something about life and love, which bring forth that man. We say if we want to know more about man, we must know more about God. And so even the Lord's Prayer starts by saying, Our Father, Mother, God. It's our, the focal point of man, our. But what is our is Father, Mother, God. Father is symbolized by the synonymous term life. Mother is symbolized by the synonymous term love. And so we have here life and love as father and mother of the universe. If we think that over, you know what that means, then we see that we don't have to bother about men. If we want to bother about anything, then let's bother about father, mother, about life and love. Because man is only the outcome. We can't change the outcome in any way except we change the cause, the source of it, the origin of it. And it says, really, here, from the plane of Absolute Christian Science, something which is quite thrilling. Namely, it says, don't bother about men. Don't think about men. Think about life and love. Think about father and mother. Because father is anyway that which has the infinite creative urge and brings forth. Love, mother, is anyway that infinite encirclement and protection and care and everything for what the father has created. So our whole responsibility for men withers away. And that's the practical side of it, that we lose the sense of being responsible for men, for the patient. As a practitioner, to have that burdensome sense to be responsible for the patient, to be responsible for the case. We aren't. We can't. How can we be responsible for something which is the outcome of the fatherhood and which is embosomed in the caring and planning and loving of the motherhood of God? We can't. And that gives us a higher sense of man. Gives us that higher sense of man where I lose the sense of man and I just have the synonymous terms. Can you see again what we have seen yesterday of the rising of the symbolism? Rising the symbolism at the end of this 1,000-year period to the synonymous terms. So, here at this point, I begin to see that in being, all the time, there is just life, fatherhood, expressing itself. Life itself fathering its creation, fathering its universe, fathering that which we call man, idea man, generic man, compound idea man. It's life doing it, life bringing it forth, life having the impulsion of bringing it forth, life renewing it, life supporting it, life maintaining it, life providing it, and love taking that which the Father brings forth in the universe and protects it, cares for it, loves it, supports it, maintains it, encircles it, keeps it holy. And that's all what we have to need to know about so-called man. Here at this point, quite different from when we go further to the point of Christian Science, at this point I don't really need to think about how big the idea man is, what the idea man is, how the compound idea man reflects all the ideas. No. Here it is life and love, the synonymous terms. And so, in the quiet hours which we have, yes. Really, only they matter. All the other hours don't matter. They are the only substance in our life where we are still enough to hear God speak. And in those quiet hours, we just see that all that man seems to need in the way of intelligence, courage, steadfastness, inspiration, wisdom, power, strength, health, all what man seems to need is life provided and love protected. So that everything really is from life and cared in love. It is life impelled, and it is love fulfilled. And so, when I think, what does it mean that everything is life impelled? What does it mean that there is constant law of activity, spontaneity, the constant urge to express itself, life expressing itself, that constant urge and impulsion to bring forth the new idea, the new vision, newness of strength, newness of health, newness of power? And when I think that this is not fiddling out somewhere, but that it is supported by life, provided by life, renewed by life, and that it is not in danger in any way because love encircles it, keeps it, cares for it, then I know something about man. It's our Father, Mother, God. The more I know about God, The more I think about life and love, the less I think what man may be, the higher my sense of manhood will be. We have been thinking, perhaps for many years, that we should always know what is man, what is man, how is man, what is the compound idea man. That's all right, that's all right. That's all right on the plane of Christian Science. We'll come to that. But that is the outcome of a big translation from the one infinite being right down through divine science and absolute Christian Science. And if I leave out that whole descent of the Holy Spirit, then all my knowledge about the idea man is metaphysical knowledge, but not science. You remember the definition of metaphysics and science, that metaphysics is the contemplation of ideas. Science is the contemplation of the infinite one, including all ideas. So when I go down from science through divine science and come to absolute Christian Science, then my thought is from the standpoint of the infinite one, looking out from the infinite one, seeing that infinite one first in its oneness in divine science, then in the plane of absolute Christian Science, seeing man really as that which God knows about himself. That's man. My life and love, father, mother, knowing themselves. That's man. Life knowing itself. Life knowing that life is always the creative impulsion, going ever on and ever on and ever on. And it's all newness and spontaneity and renewal and everything. And love with its whole affection, with its whole love, with its whole protection going on. That's man, when I think on that term. Then we come to the... Oh, yes, I must put this in. It's a statement which has been given to me from Mrs. Eddy, which I think comes in here so nicely. Mrs. Eddy must have said sometime somewhere to somebody, "If you, my dear students, could but see the grandeur of your outlook, the infinitudes of your hopes, and the infinite capabilities of your being, capabilities, you would do what? You would let error destroy itself." This comes in this tone. If we only would know the infinite capabilities of life and love, the infinite promise of life and love, then we would do what? We wouldn't care about man and our problem. We would just let that sense of life and love destroy everything which is unlike life and love. Error would just destroy itself. We wouldn't have to fight it, quarrel with it, war with it, try to knock it down, try to overcome it. We would take the higher method of letting life expressing itself infinitely and of letting love care for that expression, accept that expression infinitely. And that's our being. So if we think about God, we think about man. God and man coexistent in Christianity. Isn't that a view which is so more sublime, pure, which has no ulterior motives in itself, but just the pure motive of letting life be life, of letting life be the father of the universe, and letting love the law of integration, the law of infinite blending, to be what it is. And all would be right with us. See, with us. Then we come to the next one, science. Science in absolute Christian science is symbolized as through the terms truth and love, as one. The term life does not appear. Why? Why shouldn't it appear? Why should it be left out? Well, there must be a reason, and a clear reason. And we have seen that life is the law of infinite creativity, the law of creation, of the impulse of creation. But in science, you never have creation. You never have a law of creation. We don't need a creation. Science is speaking about facts which have never been created, which don't need to be created, which don't need to be brought forward. They are what they are by themselves. So the creative sense, the sense of impulsion, of urge, does not appear when we think in the realm of science. So life is out. Can you see that? Life is out. And so what is left is truth and love. It is truth. And not only truth, we could think it would be quite enough for science to define it as truth, because in science facts are facts by themselves. But in Christian science, these divine facts must, as we have already seen, must have a plan, must be integrated into a plan, or facts are not really Christian. They wouldn't be Christian science, a science which is Christian, which therefore must have the power of solution, of fulfillment. What's the use of knowing facts if they are facts which I don't use or don't need for my life? They wouldn't be of any use, and yet they would be facts. So Mrs. Eddy therefore not only defines here that standpoint with truth as the principle of all science, but shows that these truths are only then real truths. Proper truth, divine truth, Christian truth, when they are truth within a plane, love. And therefore these truths are already adapted to the situation, already adapted to the situation. Therefore we can call them truth as the facts eternally fulfilled or eternally adapted to its purpose. There is no more creative ability in it, no more life in it. And so on that plane of thinking, we see, all right, then what I see from that standpoint is really that every truth is already fulfilled. Every truth is already fulfilled. And we need that so often in practice, because everything we do, really, whatever we do, no matter if I have to prepare for a talk, or if I have to give a treatment, or if I have to see what is my mission in this world, or whatever it is, whatever the idea is, I can see that every idea is fulfilled. Every idea is a true idea already fulfilled. And so I can see, all right, then really each idea is a ideal, a complete ideal. And for myself, then I perhaps sit down and say, oh, so I can see that each idea knows itself, that each idea is real by itself, is already real. Each idea develops itself by itself. I just know that each idea will identify itself because it's already fulfilled. It has identity. See, it takes away that sense out of my consciousness that an idea must take time to work itself through in order to be fulfilled, in order to reach perfection. I like whatever comes to me, I like to take it and say, that idea is an ideal idea, already fulfilled. As mind, it knows itself that it is fulfilled. As spirit, I can really see that this ideal has its order place in the development, comes in at the right time, in its right place, that it is identified, namely, that it knows already its mission, its purpose, and everything. I know that this idea has by itself power, operative power. I know that this idea is eternal. It will never fade away again. It has eternal effect on everything. I know that every idea that comes to me, because it's of that nature of truth and love, is always whole in every detail. See, I don't have any more than the sense, but this idea, is it whole? Is it supported? Will it be acknowledged? Will it do the trick? Will it achieve what it should achieve? It's whole in every detail, because it's from the nature of truth and love. And so each idea that comes to me really brings out a universal blessing. Each one, because it's fulfilled. And I lose the whole sense of a time concept. You see, life is out. I lose the sense that an idea that comes to me needs now time to fulfill itself. If I believe that, then I believe in time, and then I should have to correct that with life. But in science, where there is no time, and therefore where the term life doesn't need to enter, I see that each idea is ideal and fulfilled in every way. It's consciousness. All is consciousness. Consciousness is being. We can't have another being except consciousness. The only thing we experience as being is our own consciousness. We don't experience any existence, any being, except through what we term our consciousness. We can't experience it in any other way. So we have to see that that consciousness is brought up to the highest standard we know. Up to now, mankind has believed that existence is something which is exterior to one's consciousness, which exists outside as an as objectification or as objects, and that they have an objective reality. Well, in this century, nobody believes that anymore who is thinking and knows what's going on in the world. Everybody today knows that everything which seems to be objects are only subjective views of the subjective viewer. That's all. Are constructions of the human mind. And therefore, let's see that all that is needed is not a change of objects. It's a change of consciousness. Here, it's a scientific consciousness of truth and love, which means it is the consciousness which accepts facts already as fulfilled and complete. That every fact of truth is complete and fulfilled. Yes. So, viewing back the whole range of absolute Christian science, I think we can see that we find here, through these four categories of absolute Christian science, a new sense of what is involved in practice. For instance, I like to think as the word in absolute Christian science, life, truth, and love, as the practitioner. That's the practitioner. That's a true practitioner. Life. Life always looking out and seeing its own truth, which is adapted to the situation. Life, truth, and love. That's my practitioner. I am not a practitioner. No person is a practitioner. Life, truth, and love is the practitioner. They are not asleep. They are awake. They always are conscious. And then I think about the Christ, truth, life, and love, as the treatment which this practitioner gives. That treatment which is given by life, truth, and love says, I am the truth about every individual situation, life, and therefore every situation is being resolved rightly and properly. That's the treatment the practitioner gives. And I think about life and love in Christianity as the true patient, not the suffering patient, as that man which is constantly provided by life, adapted to the situation by love. Constantly we have that sense that life maintains and provides, and that love really cares and protects the situation. That's my patient. Life and love. He isn't ill. He doesn't need anything. He has no lack. That's my patient. Life and love. God. God himself who says, I care for my own creation constantly. How could life not care for what it creates? How could love not protect what it has created? If I see that, then I have the perfect patient. And I've taken it right away from me and from the human patient. And I come to science as truth and love and see that's the result of it, the health of it, the ideal fulfilled. Before Abraham was, and because it was before Abraham, life doesn't enter in. No life, no time element enters in. Nothing had to be made whole. Nothing had to be created whole. Wholeness, truth, existed in its perfection. And that's the health, the healing. That's how I look at it sometimes. I just tell it because it has come to me, but you can do with it what you like to do. But somehow we have to see that we have to redeem the human sense of a practitioner and the human sense of giving a treatment by a practitioner, and to redeem the human sense of a patient lying in bed, and to have to redeem the human sense of what health is. And I think I can redeem that by lifting it up onto the level of absolute Christian science. And one of those quiet evenings, you know, it's worthwhile to see that universal treatment going on. God's treatment. God giving a treatment, if you like to call it that way. God being the practitioner, constantly saying, let there be light. Let there be newness of creation. Let that newness of creation be the fact of being. Let that fact of being fulfilled and complete. That's the practitioner. And that practitioner has a treatment, the Christ, that Christ is the savior to the situation. He comes as the truth about everything to every situation as life and consummates its purpose. And then when that happens in consciousness, I think, well, then everything in being, everything in the whole world, the whole family of men is just under one stream of blessing in that case. Because if that Christ is made manifest as man, then certainly he is blessed. And that's my true patient. I see, yes, that father and that mother take care of everything, constantly. Now, even then, when I have a good, deep snooze, even then, it's not dependent on me thinking about the person, about the patient. That life goes on by itself, that love goes on by itself. And that's the health of being, truth and love.